This is Aaron Palmer with 307 Net Radio, and I'm talking with State Senator Dave Kinski, who is at the legislative session. Good morning, Mr. Kinski.
Good morning, Aaron. How are you today?
Very good, thanks. And you?
I'm well. It's the only downside is I'm not home. I'm in Cheyenne. On the whole, I'd rather be home, but, you know, job to do.
Understandable. Okay. We had a busy week last week in the legislature, which was kind of mostly about the budget. So I wanted to touch on that and just get your overall idea on the budget and where everything went and why.
Sure. So we finished up the budget on Friday, late afternoon, and I think everybody, and particularly me, was just really worn out because you go through three rounds of readings with lots of amendments, lots of debate, a very passionate debate. And then when you finally pass the budget, which in the Senate, it was only a 3-vote margin. There were 14 voted against the budget, 17-4. So that was kind of interesting that it was that close. And then you'd leave for the weekend and because you don't know what the House did. You know what you did, but you got to know what the House did. So then Monday morning, this past Monday, you get a report that kind of summarizes the difference between the House and the Senate. And then you try to digest that, try to understand that. And then we're still waiting for the House to send some other bills over to us that we need to process, like the ARPA bill, the American Recovery Program Act, or whatever it is. You know, there's still tens of millions of dollars there that we got to make a decision as to what to do with. And then some of the decisions that were made previously could be reversed and a different decision might be made. So there's still a ways to go to get it all done. But there are some differences between the House and the Senate.
So those are pending.
Yeah. What happens is they have to appoint what's called a joint conference committee, 5 people from the House, 5 people from the Senate, to sit down and go over all the differences between the House and the Senate budgets. And before you get there, of course, I've got to sit down with leadership and with my appropriations committee and say, which of these differences are we okay with? And which of these differences are we not okay with that we need to have a discussion with our House colleagues?
Senator Kinski, I wanted to talk a little bit about mental health bills, which are being discussed. I don't know exactly how many, but figured you would know more about that. Can you give us an update there?
I don't know about individual mental health bills, but I can tell you about mental health in the budget.
Okay.
The House proposed a series of restorations of cuts to things like developmentally disabled adults and similar kind of mental health programs, and then actually putting some raises in, as well as increases for nursing homes. And the Senate actually went along with every single one of those except one, which I was kind of surprised. There were a series of restorations of cuts and a series of hikes that the governor hadn't even asked for, the Department of Health hadn't even asked for. And, all told, it raises our ongoing spending by 30 to 40 million bucks per budget cycle. I thought the Senate would reject those. And in fact, they went along with all of them except one. And the feeling was is that we had gone through that difficult time where we had cut things so deep that perhaps this was the time to ease up. Well, my view, we already did that the last session, and now we're not only easing up, we're putting more back. And I can see the argument both ways. Aaron, my perspective on it, though, is I was here during the hard times and had to do a lot of that cutting, and I don't want to see us get into trouble again. Because I don't want to be the guy to have to wade back in there and cut it all over again when this one-time money runs out because they're doing ongoing spending. But we had the debate, and I didn't win that one, so you move on.
That kind of seems like it ties in with this next question, that 988 suicide prevention funding. What happened there?
And Aaron, that's a House bill, correct?
Yes.
So The 988 funding, I don't know what happened on the House side. I can speculate a little bit. It's not yet come to the Senate. My feeling on it is, as I understand it, they wanted to create a $40 million a year trust fund. And the problem I have with setting up all these funds is we set up a trust fund for this, we set up a trust fund for that, we set up an endowment for this, we set up an endowment for that. And then those things go on to autopilot. They kick off income, and the program goes on. Where does the legislature come in with its job to reexamine these programs every 2 years? When you set up an endowment or a trust fund and it just goes on autopilot, kicks off income, and you know the executive branch or whoever spends the money on who knows what. So I believe what happened is the trust fund part of it got cut out. The other part of it is, when it first came to us as, let's set up Wyoming's own hotline, we were told there was no way ever it would exceed $1 million a year. And as I understand, they're looking for substantially more than that. So there's a little bit of sticker shock going on. There will be funding for a 988 hotline. There will be funding for suicide prevention. Those things are all important. The question is, how do you do it? Do you set up a trust fund that just kicks off income forever, and that's one way, or do you just appropriate what you need every 2 years and then examine the program? Is it working? Is it being cost effective every 2 years? And it's the latter approach that I favor.
One thing that failed recently is the Interstate 80 toll bill, which has been brought up, I think, in the last three legislative sessions, and it's failed all three times. Just wanted to get your take on that. Is it something that we do need? Is it something that you disagree with? And why does it fail?
Well, I don't know about the bill this year, but in the prior years, it was a study. It was not a proposal to actually make it a toll road. It was a study. And I voted against it, because I heard so much from my constituents, from the grassroots. The problem with it is just the title. People get mad, livid. There's going to be a toll on I-80. No way in heck. And I get that. When you start looking at the facts, it gets a little bit different, in that it takes a huge portion of YDOT's maintenance budget. And I mean, it's like over a third, which leaves less money for paving county roads, which leaves less money for other state highways, the maintenance of them. And so who uses I-80? Well, by and large, it's a transportation corridor for semi-tractor trailers going back and forth across the United States. And that's what really causes the wear and tear on it. So the idea is they wanted to take a look at a study. And I know a lot of people go, well, I don't want to pay a toll every time I get off and on I-80. Well, the way you deal with that is the toll is just at either end of the state. You pay when you come into Wyoming on the eastern border. You pay when you leave Wyoming on the western border. If you're just driving around commuting, you know, you don't pay anything. That's the basic concept. So I'll probably vote no on it, just because I hear from so many people back home. But it's an idea that probably really needs to be looked at, because we are paying the price for all those cross-country charters.
Senate File 111 was one that is kind of, it's garnered a lot of attention, let me put it that way. Okay. Gender-affirming treatments as child abuse. And this was a Senate file. And so I'm assuming you're pretty familiar with it. So can you tell us a little bit about that and why you think people voted for this? And then I've got some follow-up questions after that, please.
Well, so gender-affirming is a nationwide, worldwide trend. And it involves somebody who might be 11 years old, might be 6 years old, deciding for whatever reason that if they were born a male, they should be a female, or vice versa, and receiving hormone treatments, sometimes surgery, to change their gender. There's a couple of things. One, that's called dysphoria. Anybody going through a hard time like that, we must treat with dignity and respect. And I think that's the way this debate went, as opposed to those who were opposed saying, you're all bigots, you're all full of hate. Well, no, that's not it. That's not it. It's concern and love for children. Does an 11-year-old have the capacity to make a decision to transition when the evidence is that nearly all teens or preteens go through some period of trying to, you know, what am I? Who am I? And sometimes doubt. There's growing evidence that the phenomena is not, as some would have us believe, just a natural phenomena, but it's social contagion. So the number of young girls who are looking for gender transitioning is far outstripping the number of young men. The number of kids seeking gender transition is just growing by leaps and bounds. So there are some say, well, that's just the way of the world. If they want to be some other gender, you know, you're a bigot if you don't want that to happen. Well, if you want to read more about it, go to the Swedish National Health Service, where they have basically banned all but the most extraordinary gender treatments based on evidence that it is a social contagion phenomena, based on evidence that many teens who go through this have regret and want it reversed, and the fact that it just seems to be growing out of proportion to what you would think that, you know, a normal percentage of dysphoric teens might be. So there are, and this bill did make provision for those where there are genuinely medical exceptions. There are some situations where, you know, it's just uncertain because of whatever happened at birth. But do you want an 11-year-old making that decision? Well, mom said it was okay. Well, you know, do you want mom really making that decision? Why would we do that? We wouldn't allow mom to, you know, treat the kid in other ways that are, you know, perhaps harmful and irreversible. And this is surgery, and there is evidence that some of these transition treatments can be harmful. So it says you're not going to be allowed to do it. If that child gets to the age of majority and they want to do that, then that's their prerogative, but not when you're 12.
Opinion here. Is this a government overreach, or is this just protecting children?
I think it's protecting children. And I'll tell you what's happening worldwide. Besides the Swedish National Health Service, in Great Britain, their National Health Service followed the Swedes and said, we are not going to allow all these gender transitions based on the same evidence that it's social contagion, that it's dangerous, that there's great regret later by those who transition, many of them, not all, and that it's irreversible, and that it's not a decision that should be made by a child or by that child's parents. That's a decision that if somebody's going to make it, it should be after they come through the age of majority, after they've passed through puberty, after they've passed through the teenage years.
So again, 18 years old, an adult, you can make your own decisions.
Yeah.
Okay. There was a bill that was also tied to gender and sports. Do you know what I'm talking about there?
Yeah, I do. This was a bill. This is a bill to say that if you are born a biological female, you can compete in female sports. If you're born a biological male, you cannot compete in female sports. And it's brought by a senator who actually is a former Olympian. She was a basketball player. She was on the Olympics team. And just a very kind-hearted woman. You know, I resist when people say, well, you're a bigot. That's not the case. This has nothing to do with young men who wish to transition. It has to do with the fact that boys are biologically different from women, even when they go through gender transitioning or gender affirming treatments. So you have situations, for instance, where there's a young girl who has competed all through high school. She's competed in college. She's now a senior in swimming. I read about the situation the other day. There's a young man who was on the varsity swimming team for 3 years. He goes through hormone suppression for 1 year, signs up for the girls' team, and starts clocking all the records, knocking all the girls out. Is that fair?
That's a valid question. I remember that he was like ranked in the 400s in the male end of it. And then once he transitioned to female, he was like the top female, quote unquote, swimmer,
yeah,
in that sport. So there's obviously a big difference in the competition between men and women.
And again, what happens is when you stand up for young girls in fair competition, you're called a bigot. And I'm going to resist that. Again, I will say that teens or young people going through gender dysphoria must be treated with respect and dignity. This is not about bigotry. This is not about hatred. Those are shut up words. That's when people just want you to shut up. They call you names. This is about fairness for girls, period.
And so what's the status on that bill right now?
Well, that bill passed the Senate, and it's going over to the House.
Okay. Those are the questions I had this week, Senator Kinski. Would you like to address everyone back home or anything else you'd like to add?
Well, there is one point of debate between the House and the Senate that I think is interesting. And it comes down to kind of, you know, where would any individual voter fall on this? Because reasonable minds could differ. But the governor asked the last session for a fund that it was initially $100 million, and there was an ask or a move to allocate another $160 million and then some other funds that would get this fund to $300 million. That the governor could use as a match for some of these big projects that might come to Wyoming. So there's billions of dollars in federal money out there for some of these programs that the feds will put down, you know, $3 if you put down a dollar. And the governor can't just spend it willy-nilly. You know, he's got to bring it to the legislature, but he wants to be able to go to the table and say, hey, look, Wyoming's serious. We're serious about this. Look at this money that we're ready to put up as a match. And what are those programs? Well, one is the hydrogen hub, or some call it, you know, Wyoming's Energy Future 2.0. This is to a program to manufacture hydrogen, which is clean burning. You know, when you burn hydrogen, you get what? Oxygen and water. And so that's a huge project that a number of other states have kind of set their cap on. That were it to come to Wyoming, it has the potential to replace declining oil and declining gas and coal. The other project is the Natrium plant, and this is a nuclear power plant based on new technology for nuclear plants that would go into the Kemmerer power plant. So the power company is shutting down the Kemmerer coal plants. You could drop in this packaged nuclear plant there. All the lines to transmit the electricity are already in place. It makes all the sense in the world, and it keeps Kemmerer from just drying up and blowing away. You could tax it so that potentially could take the place of the coal, oil, gas revenue base that we have. That would be another kind of Wyoming's Energy Future 2.0. And again, there's huge grant money available for those kind of programs, but you've got to be able to say, we're serious player, we're at the table, we've got some match money. Another one is actually a plant to refine that uranium. The two largest producers are New Mexico and Wyoming. Instead of just producing it and shipping it out of state, why don't we produce it and process it here? So that's another project. Then the final project that is less clear exactly how we're going to get it to benefit Wyoming. They call it GBSD, Ground-Based Strategic Defense, and this is a multi-billion-dollar effort to update our missile systems. And as you know, those missile systems are spread in the underground all over Montana, North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, and Warren Air Force Base is one of the command centers for that. And it lends the potential for not only helping the military, not only helping the defense of the United States, but also bringing a lot of business into Wyoming, potential expansion of the base. So that's another one where you've got to be at the ready to say, we've got a match ready. We're ready to play. Now, some would say, no, we just don't want to do any of those. Or if we do, we don't want to be putting any money towards matches. Or we don't like federal programs to do those things. And then there's others that say, you know, if it could take the place of some of our base industries, we should take a look at it. And the thing about it is, this money goes into a pot. If the governor strikes out, if we can't land any of those, the money comes right back to the legislature. It doesn't get spent. So I'm one of those that wants to make sure the governor has the resources to go chasing these things. And, you know, I hope they're realistic. If they're not, we'll know, and the money will roll back into the state's coffers. Actually, it never leaves the state's coffers. It's still there until there's approval for a project. So that's one where the Senate did agree to put another $160 million towards that. The House did not agree. The House instead put that money into permanent savings. So that makes me conflicted, because I really like the idea of putting $150 million into permanent savings. So there's a lot of stuff going on there, Aaron, but it's one of the stories that just doesn't get a lot of time, but I think it's just fascinating. It's just fascinating to see that play out.
That's State Senator Dave Kinski speaking from the legislative session in Cheyenne. This is Aaron Palmer with 307 Net Radio. Thank you, Senator Kinski, for joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week.
It's always a pleasure, Aaron. Thank you. I look forward to it.